In a moment on Coast to Coast, we are going to be talking about a person's near-death experience and its profound implications. We'll be back in a moment with Tori Hartman on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. Tori Hartman, a world-renowned psychic, author, spiritual teacher. She is the only American psychic ever interviewed by the New York Times and the Los Angeles Business Journal that has helped celebrities, such as, you might recall, Jeff Lewis launching his TV show, Flipping Out, on the Bravo networks. After a near-death experience some time ago, Tori began having a series of encounters with angels that apparently revealed the profound fables that were to become the basis for her best-selling book, Chakra Wisdom Oracle Cards and Toolkit, a system that has the power to transform your life. Here's Tori Hartman on Coast to Coast. Good, I should say morning now, Tori.
It is morning, George.
It is a late show, isn't it?
Yes.
Where are you these days?
I'm in Los Angeles.
Oh, okay. All right, great. I just left L.A. I'm in St. Louis, but I'm back in a couple weeks. How's the weather? Here it's been hot in that area, huh, still?
It's been ridiculous. I mean, for L.A., yes, very ridiculous, you know. But usually it's 72 and beautiful, so who
I know it. It
how
really
can
is.
I complain?
But so dry. Tell me a little bit more about yourself, other than the bio.
Well, you mean jumping off the page, making me real?
You got it.
Yeah, it's interesting because I was just talking earlier with a friend of mine, and I was just saying that I really see my work, I mean, if you use the term psychic, as making my job obsolete. I never actually, you know, I never really got up in the morning and said, okay, I'm going to be psychic, I'm going to do all this spiritual stuff, I'm going to be teaching spirituality, and I'm like, it's the last thing I would expect myself to be doing, to be honest. It was actually after my near-death experience that my life began to spin in a different direction. And just to give you a little of my background, I grew up in New York City.
Uh-huh.
And my father was a D-Day veteran. He jumped on D-Day. And he was a great guy. I was very lucky to have such a good dad. And he was very accepting of some of my strange visions. And my parents were very New Yorkers in the 50s kind of people. Papa was a Broadway actor, and I think they really accepted. I mean, I'd come in and say I saw a spirit or something, and my mother would say, oh, of course you did. It was just very...
Without putting you down, right? Yeah.
Oh, not at all. And that's the thing. It was very natural in our family to work off of our intuition and to trust that. And I'm convinced that that's how my father survived the war, because there were so many stories he told me, but you know, from a very young age, I just knew things. And it was almost strange because, you know, I'd say, Papa, you don't have to worry about money. You're going to get this check. And I would name a figure. And in this case, I use the example of $308. And sure enough, 2 days later, he'd get a check for that amount from some residual. And it was just a really interesting thing because at first he thought, how do you know this? And I didn't know how I knew. And it wasn't until, you know, when I was growing up, my mother would sit me down and say, well, you have no command of the language. Now, I was 5 years old, okay? So she said, I'm going to start writing your papers for you. So she would dictate all my school papers till I was 15 and she died. And I didn't know, you know, there was anything wrong with that. I was kind of like, well, she got A's, I don't care. But when she died, I failed English in high school. And it really spun me in a very different direction because I think that from that experience, I often say to people that your wounding becomes your greatest gift. And the things we try to hide are the things that are often the most exceptional parts of us. And I think there's this whole idea that we have to go out and find ourselves somewhere. And the idea is that, you know, it's right here. And that was what began for me was that journey after my mother died, and then I had a near-death experience in my 20s.
Tell us what happened there.
Well, I got really, really sick, and, you know, I don't know you know, how else to say it, except I was really sick. I called my dad and said, Papa, I don't feel good. And he rushed me to the hospital. And I was sitting there and I just said, I don't know if I'm going to make it. And I just started falling backwards. And as I did, I turned and I saw myself fall. And I was like, this is odd. And then I didn't hear anything. And all of a sudden, everything went silent. And it was just pitch black. And I heard nothing. And I thought, oh, this is very calm.
This is it, right?
And all of a sudden, it was like this tractor beam, George. I was just being pulled up into the night sky, so to speak. And I was just kind of calm. And all of a sudden, I realized I saw this light. And I saw, you know, what people say are figures. They looked like fingers in the distance, actually. That's how far I was. You know, it was like the figures roaming back and forth in the light, so to speak. And
yeah.
All of a sudden I said, oh, no, wait, I'm not breathing. There was this recognition. I didn't hear my own breath. And I just started struggling. And all of a sudden it was like this tractor beam cut me loose. And I came flying back into my body. And when I sat up, everybody in the room was startled. You know, I was like, that was my experience. And when I came back, what I learned from that was that for those of us who actually have left our bodies and had near-death experiences, what happens is it's almost like we're more intuitive because our soul has left and come back. So there's almost space in there, you know? And I started having these visitations from these angels that would tell me these stories, and they wouldn't go away till I wrote them down. And they're like, okay, all right, I'll write this down.
Now, were these visitations in your mind, or did you see them?
It was definitely in my mind. And it's funny, as you say that, you know, I want to really quantify and qualify that. You know, it's kind of like an external mind experience. It's not something that's necessarily in your brain. It's almost as if there's something outside of you telling you a story.
Okay.
But it definitely is, it occurs, it comes into your brain, but it's not of your brain, if that makes sense.
Almost like a dream, or that kind of a feeling?
Yes. Almost dreamlike, and yet, yeah, you know what? That's exactly what it's like. It's almost dreamlike, because at the time I was working on a book for Putnam. It was it would later get published. It was a book that had to do with color and fashion. And all of these fables, if you will, these angels told me these fables, and they were all based on color. So they were like, you know, my gosh, I'm thinking Cherry Heart, Crimson Dreams, you know, mm-hmm. these kind of strange names. And they all had morals to them. They all had certain specific ideas around them, and I didn't even know at the time the value of it. You know, I didn't, to me, they were just in my way. You know, it's like I always say to people, if you want to know what you're supposed to do, just, you know, try to avoid it and you'll trip over it, you know. But it was really something that I kind of thought, oh, this is in my way. I don't want to do this. I don't want to have some neon sign in Times Square saying psychic reader. This is ridiculous. I mean, I had like these spirits were like talking to me and telling me stuff, and people would touch me and I'd give them readings and I'd say, oh no, I'm not going to do this. This is not me. And I actually went to a woman who helped me at the time, because I said to her, I don't want to be this psychic doing readings somewhere. This isn't my thing. And she said, well, you never turn a gift back like that. But you can ask to use the gift in a way that is in alignment with who you are. And I said, well, I'm a writer. I'd like to have that happen. And soon after that, that's when the angels started coming. And so it was very interesting. It wasn't until recently, George, I sat up in bed, I guess, gosh, I want to say, this is how this work evolves. You see, it's not like I came in knowing everything, you know. It was really like, I guess about 6 months ago, all of a sudden I sat up in bed and it hit me. Because I've said for years to people, your wounding is your greatest gift. And everybody says, uh-huh, okay. But then I realized that as I sat up, I went, oh my goodness, I was uniquely qualified by my wounding to take the dictation from the angels. My mother made me sit there and take dictation from her. So of course these angels came to me to tell me these fables.
You were ready and qualified.
It started to make sense to me. Right. I was pre-qualified by my wounding.
Yeah.
When, and I think that's when, the thing, you know. Go ahead.
When they come to you, I mean, do you summon them or do they just come at you?
Oh, let me tell you something. They showed up like uninvited guests at a party.
They're always that way.
It was just, gosh, stop eating the dip, you know. No, I mean, I just like, they always would show up and I'd say, now? Really? And it would just be like, there were times I wrote some stuff there's one I wrote on a napkin because I couldn't find something to write on. I mean, I would have written on a wall if you know, it was just, they wouldn't go away till I wrote down the story. And each of these stories, there's 49 of them. And what happened was very interesting, actually. I had a bunch of friends who were, you know, in the biz in LA, you know, and I just, let's do this mastermind group. And that's how the fables developed, because we had these fables, right? I had the fables and they were in drawers and I just ignored them for almost 10 years because I thought, oh, please, you know, I don't know what they are. I wasn't sure. And at the time I got together a little mastermind group and there were a bunch of writers and producers in the group, and we just would sit around on Sunday night and talk about art, you know, and our careers and things like that. And one night I pulled out one of the fables and I read it. And, you know, everybody said, where'd you get that? Said, well, it's this death experience thing.
You didn't want to tell them, did you?
No, I was embarrassed. And that's the thing. It's like the last thing you want to do is, I'm at a party and someone says, what do you do? I'm a psychic. And they say, and I say, what do you do? And they say, you should guess. And I said, no, I'm not a mind reader.
And then you tell them, I almost died and now angels visit me.
Yeah, that's the first thing I say after I say, can I get something to eat? You know, it's like, yeah, it's such a strange thing. And I you know, but these, what happened was over a 2-year period in this mastermind group, we would read every week, we'd read one of these fables and they developed and it became a manuscript. And then I went on to, my first incarnation was to, you know, I self-published it. I found an artist on the internet, George, like somebody,
wow.
I really liked her work. And I said, hey, will you draw these for me? And she said, sure, but it's going to take me a year. I said,
a year?
I've been with this for 15, you know, it's like having a teenager. And she said, well, okay. So at the end of the project, she said to me, well, I feel like there's another card. And I said, I don't feel another card. I feel like there's another spirit or angel, but I don't feel another card. And I went on to self-publish it. And of course, you know, if you want to know what 10,000 units looks like, I can tell you. I had no idea. I spent my life savings. It's the dumbest thing I ever did. But also, thank God for naivety, right? So when they showed up on my lawn in my driveway, my neighbor's driveway, I panicked, then I dropped to my knees and I prayed, and then I got them into a storage facility, and then I realized that at the time, I couldn't even sell them on Amazon because it would cost me more the way the percentages were, and I thought, oh no. And so with my last $5,000, I put them up free on a shuffler online, and people started coming, and in the next almost 3 years, I sold 10,000 units off my website. And then I woke up and said, okay, it's, you know, again, spirit just said, and when I say spirit said, it's like this calling. It's like this sense of go to London and I follow it. It's like following your intuition, right? And I just said, okay. And I went to the London Book Fair and I said, I'm going to sell the cards to a British publisher. And everybody said to me, well, they don't do foreign rights there at that show. They only do, you know, they don't do regular acquisitions. They only do foreign rights. And I said, well, that's okay. I'm foreign. It'll be great. And so
and you found
someone. I sold a publisher called Watkins. And they're the oldest mind, body, spirit publisher in the world. They published Carl Jung, and they were known for publishing thought leaders at the time, you know, turn of the century, and there was a lot of work that they've done over the years. And this, the publisher there, Joe, she was had originally opened a very big publisher in the UK and then came over to Watkins, and it was a phenomenal experience. I mean, I've been, the first thing she said to me is, well, can we change the title? I said, sure. So we published the card deck. They did the deck, and then they called one of the gals who'd studied the cards with me and said, because she said, well, how did you learn to read the cards? And my this gal who studied with me said, oh, well, that's easy. I just studied the original fables, because the original fables are the, you know, that's the whole thing. And the card deck had cut the fables down to just a little legend. So immediately my agent calls and says, oh my gosh, we need to do the other book. I'm like, okay. So it's been really one of those very strange experiences, George, that it's almost, in some ways, it's really surreal, because from the day it hit online, it has stayed at number one. And I have to tell you, you know, one of the things that I'm really kind of in awe of is that whole thing of, like, you know, where I didn't send out emails to friends saying, go buy it on this day so I can make it a bestseller, you
right,
know?
Right.
I didn't do any of that.
You didn't have to. It did it by itself, yeah.
That's what I mean. It's got its own life, and it's really fascinating when, and you know what I mean when I say this, we all energetically sense truth. And, you know, when I say to you that as a psychic, my job is to make my job obsolete, what I mean by that is, you know, I was on a show, I guess, about a year ago, maybe two now, and this woman calls in, and she's wanting a reading, and she's like, does he love me? And I said, who cares? You're miserable. And there was this moment.
You're like a counselor.
Everybody got it except for her. What?
You're like a counselor sometimes.
Well, that's it. I said, you need a counselor. You need a therapist, not a psychic. Because, you see, this is where this whole thing, I think, becomes really, really dangerous, is that no matter what I would have said to her, it wouldn't have been healthy for her. In other words, if I said, well, yeah, he does love you, then she would have interpreted it as, oh, he's coming back and going to do what I want.
Right. I would interpret it like that, sure.
Exactly.
That's the way
it
sounds.
I would too if somebody said that, right? I mean, well, and that's the point, is that isn't that taking away from, you know, what that person knows to be true? You know, she knew the truth. That's why she was crying.
Well, what would you say, Tori, is, for what you do, your specialty?
You know, I would say that my work is really about getting out of the way and letting people see their own intuitive wisdom. You know,
which we all have.
Kids, right? We all have it.
Yeah.
We all have it. You know, I'm thinking of dodgeball all of a sudden. You know, I think my job is to just get out of the way. You know, I always tell people when I'm teaching, I say, you're going to hate me at a certain point, because when we're taking the process from our brain operating to our intuition operating, our brain's sole purpose in spiritual work, in our life, really, in this definition, is to protect us. And when I talk about that, let's just look at this as the equation, right? The old equation was your brain plus your intuition equals pursuing your dreams. What if we've had that a little backwards? What if it's actually your intuition minus your brain equals living your purpose?
And at that point, Tori, we will be back with more on Coast to Coast AM. Well, I hope you all had an enjoyable Independence Weekend. And now I can't believe it. well past the halfway point now into the year, going very quickly indeed. And we'll be with you on all the holidays, as I've pledged to you many, many years ago. And we had Connie Willis here on Saturday. As you know, I'll be live on every holiday that falls during my schedule. And if for some reason it falls on a Saturday like it did this weekend, we'll have somebody live for you. And if they can't do it, I'll come in and we'll do that too. Hey, opportunity for you too to watch our television program Beyond Belief. If you have not watched it yet, please go to this website, beyondbelief.com, and take advantage of the promotional offers that they have. I think you'll like the show. It's just a great way to be part of Coast to Coast. And more importantly, if you've got the ability to watch it on your flat screen, if you have that capability now of getting the internet up on your flat screen, Beyond Belief, you can watch that program right there and look at all the past shows. The highest rated program we still have out there is my interview with David Wilcock. And it has well over, gosh, just last week, 20,000 views on that. So go ahead and watch that program. You can look at all the past programs when you go to beyondbelief.com. And welcome back. We're with the psychic Tori Hartman. That word psychic means so much, Tori, but for you personally, what does it mean?
Well, I think for me it means a kind of, in a way, a reluctant gift. I mean, I never really saw myself that way, and I also feel very strongly that everyone has their own gifts. And I really, as I said at the beginning, George, I really feel like my job is to make my job obsolete. I mean, I really think that everyone has a powerful intuition of what's right in their life and how to follow it. But I think we've gotten to a place where we start taking other people's pulse to see how we're feeling. And really, to me, psychic means that you have an intuitive sense of something about circumstances around you or around another person. And I think it can be very powerful and very helpful if you use it in an empathic capacity. And so I consider myself much more of an empath than a psychic, because I think that predicting the future for people, it's ever changing, and I think we're in control of our own destiny. So I think it can be dangerous sometimes to say, oh, this is going to happen, when, you know, it could change based on people's free will.
Some psychics will not tell people if they see things that are very dangerous in their future, like they may die or they may get sick. How do you handle that?
Well, luckily, that hasn't come up like that, but it has come up where I was at a party years ago. I sat down next to a woman and I just looked at her and I just felt this overwhelming feeling. And I said, I'm so sorry, I don't normally do this. And she said, excuse me. And I said, you have to go to a doctor right now. Like, if you don't go to a doctor, you have breast cancer. You've got to go right now. She just looked at me like I'd grown two heads, which I probably would have looked at her that way too, if she had said that to me. And I said, if you don't go, you will never dance at your daughter's wedding.
Wow.
And her response was, my daughter's not getting married. And I said, okay, I'm just telling you, and that's just the feeling I have. 3 years later, I'm at home, and I get a call, and this woman says, is this Tori Hartman? Yes. Is this Tori Hartman? Yes, it's me.
I'm not kidding you. It's me, right?
Yeah, it really is me. Really, it's live. I'm here. And she said, reintroduced herself and said, I don't know if you remember me. And she said, but I did go to the doctor because you scared me. And the doctor, I insisted that they do this test. And the doctor said, they had no idea how I found it. It was, the cancer in my breast was like a centimeter from my lymph nodes. And she said, we caught it in time. And last week I danced at my daughter's wedding.
Wow.
And I thought,
I love that story.
I have to find you. And I thought, that's when this gift is so beautiful. You know, when we can share with people an inspirational experience. You know, those are the kinds of moments, George, that make me realize that I'm just so grateful when I can share that. You know, I have to tell you, I mean, I have these, you know, years ago, this guy said to me, he's a fairly successful actor now, he turns to me and says, "Do you really believe this bleep that you do?" And
oh,
I said,
"Really?
No."
Huh.
Yeah, he said, I looked at him, I said, "No, I don't." And he looked at me and said, "What?" I said, "I don't believe it, I know it." And he just looked at me and I said, "I can't explain something I know." And I learned from that moment that our beliefs are all fear-based. And when we spend our life trying to change a belief, we're just changing one fear for another. But when we know something, when we have an inner wisdom about something, it's inspirational. And I think that's what a good intuitive connection should do. I think, you know, when you have those moments when everything just shifts and the world is better because you're having that connection with another human being, that's what I think a good reading should do. And I think it should change your life for the better. I think, you know, I had another client come to me, and this is another situation where I don't see the problems without a solution is how my work comes. I really don't live in the problem. And had a client come to me, and she walked in. At the time I was doing a lot of real estate stuff. She walks in, she has cash in her hand. She says, "I just want to know if my house is going to sell." I looked at her and I said, "That's it?" She said, "Yes." I said, "That's the only thing you want to ask me?" And she said, "Yes." And I said, "Okay, no." She looked at me.
Nice.
She's like,
"Well, now, did you just say that or did you feel that?"
I felt it and I said it. And I said, "But I will tell you this," and this goes back to the health thing and the question you were asking about negative things. I said, "But I do have some very important information for you, and I think you need to sit down." And she sat down, and I said, "You are about to be diagnosed with terminal cancer."
Oh, my God.
"And they're wrong. And I want to tell you they're completely wrong, and they're going to try to talk you out of the treatment. Don't let them do it.
How
you are
could
going
they,
to survive this."
How could they make a mistake like that? Jeez.
Well, that's here's the brilliance of it, okay? How could I know this, right? I mean, who knew, right? I mean, I don't
know.
I just knew this. I was just, there was this wisdom, this knowing I was telling her. And in the midst of all this, this is part of the story too, and I will tell you how they did it. But I said, "By the way," I said, you're "the good news is you're about to meet the love of your life." And she looks at me, she says, "Please, I'm 64 years old. I've been married twice. I'm done." I said, no. He's around the corner. He's from around the corner. That's what I'm hearing. Right? Well, the way they made the mistake, and she did get diagnosed a couple weeks later. I'll tell you this part. I'll answer that question in a moment. She got diagnosed. She gets the phone call, and she's stumbling to the front door because the front door, this guy's knocking, and he says, "Hi, I'm looking for," you know, he was looking for her brother who lived up the street. And he said, "Yeah, my name's so-and-so. I grew up around the corner from you guys." And she looks at him and she's, "Around the corner? Come on in." Well, he found out she'd been diagnosed and he refused to leave. He literally stayed with her from that moment till she was completely healed. And her house did not sell because rejection is God's protection. Her house didn't sell because all of her neighbors loved her and helped bring her food and helped her through
sure.
the whole experience.
They were the support staff.
Now, they actually, it was the support, right? Now, here's the great part of it. The doctors were kind of, she said, "Well, I'm going to take the treatment." They said, "Well, you know, you should put your affairs in order." She said, no, I'm going to meet the love of my life." And she says to them, "I'm taking the treatment. I'm surviving this thing." And they're like, "How can you be so sure? We're the experts." And she said, "No, my psychic told me I'm going to live." And long story short, they discovered that the cancer had not developed in the way they thought it had. And She has been in remission, and she ended up marrying the guy who had grown up around the corner from her. And she's having the time of her life, and this is like 10 years ago or so. And the point is that I think that there's no point for me in doing this work if I can't support people in getting back on their path.
That's
and I
good.
Think I find a lot of people who've just been somehow derailed, and it's really about just reminding them who they are.
Tori, do you make predictions of the future? Do you do that? Do you go there?
Sometimes it depends. I prefer to support people in where they are, because I think it's sort of like, I have done it, but I don't do it as much anymore. And I think the gift has shifted as a result. There have been a lot of, for me, I think it's really, there have been a lot of people that when they really need a reading, they find me, and I will do a reading for them and help put them back on track. But I really, it's not so much about, you know, what's going to happen tomorrow. It's about people whose lives are falling apart and
right.
need them,
okay.
need to know they're going to be okay.
So you don't get into the economy's tanking in 2 years, or a war's going to break out in, you know, 6 months. You don't go there.
I try not to. But if you get me going politically, sometimes I do.
And are you right? And let me ask you this, in terms of your accuracy, and, I want to put you on the spot, but how accurate do you think you are as a psychic?
It's funny. I would say I am very, very accurate. I would put myself in the 90% category.
Well,
only.
That's big.
The reason I say this is because of the empathic work, not so much what I'm predicting, but, you know, for example, and you'll see, you know, the way I work with people is I really, it's more about validating what's going on with them so that I can guide them to where they need to be. It's almost like I see the work as the bridge. And so when I say it's accurate in taking them across the bridge to get them to the other side. Because ultimately, it's really about finding our faith again.
Well, 90% is huge. It's huge. You know, we haven't talked about Chakra Wisdom Oracle Toolkit or Oracle Cards. Tell me about them. In the time we have before the top of the hour, and then we're going to come back and take some calls, and you will do some readings for individuals besides their questions. Okay. Now, tell me about the Oracle Cards and Oracle Toolkit. What are they?
Well, the first thing I want to say is that there's a complete difference between Tarot and Oracle. All right, they're just two different worlds.
Okay.
The Chakra Wisdom Cards, when I was talking about how they were color-based, basically, the idea is that there are seven chakra energy centers in our body. Now, not to get too woo-woo, I'm less woo and more you, but the idea is that each of these energy centers basically hold our own wisdom, and it's almost like a map of our purpose. So what I discovered when I started studying these fables and working with the fables was I started to realize that every single person who studied these cards, or if I can say the fables, really, they started to get into their purpose and live their purpose. And their lives came into an alignment that was very different than it was before. They had an understanding of when they went into upset. So just to give you an example, most people will quit when they're pursuing something between the second and third week of any project. And a lot of people say, well, what's that about? Well, what I've noticed, and especially studying the cards and working with the elements of the chakra, is that between the second and third, the second is our emotions, if you will, and the third is our thoughts. So when we are emotionally in some kind of upset, it shuts our brain down. Like our brain cannot process and get through problems. So one of the things that I found is that through working with the principals of the cards, I've started to find out that the roadblocks that people encounter in their life are very easy to, I want to say they're like suitcases that just haven't been unpacked. And your blocks actually hold the key to your purpose and your future. And when I say that, it's more important that the person I'm working with has the aha than I do some brilliant prediction. Because it's when you get it that it stays with you forever. And so if I look at it this way, I really see my work as more facilitating the experience. Now, when we look at the Chakra Wisdom cards, it's a card deck. So, you know, some people will say to me, well, wait a minute, you know, is there some power in the card? And I say, no, the card is like a mirror. It's like a lesson,
it's a tool.
Not a lecture.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. So if I pull the card, like, for example, if I just pulled a card randomly for you right now, okay, and I just pulled the grief card, and it's reversed. And the grief fable says, grief is love without a place to go. So it doesn't necessarily mean that somebody's going to die. It just means that there may be something that you're shedding or giving up or moving into a new aspect of your life, especially with your heart. You're taking on some new project or something that means something to you. And sometimes we have to give up other things for that. So when I look at these fables and I can start seeing them as, you know, as kind of stepping stones, it becomes very interesting to put the stories together. And what happened with the toolkit, which is a separate book, is that that original toolkit was all of the original, I want to say, exercises that we came up with in the mastermind groups. And I know my friend Mark's been on your show a couple times. He was in the original mastermind.
Mark Lerner?
Zikri.
Mark Zikri, I love him. Great guy. Mark Lerner's our astrologer. Mark Zikri's our Twilight Zone expert.
Exactly. And he and his wife are in the original fable group. How funny is that?
That is cool. Small world, isn't it?
It is. And that's what happens, is that when you're doing your life's work and your purpose, what begins to happen is you get those wonderful, like, I want to call them like road signs. It's like God's way of remaining anonymous. You know, things, I call them truth bumps. You know, when you start to see, there's something magical here. And something I want to say about the, which is really interesting, and I know we're coming up to the top, but I want to say this. One of the things that happened when I was teaching the cards was that I started to stumble across the concept of multi-generational healing. And what I learned in these cards is that our issues, or our pain, if you will, skips a generation. So we're really here to heal the issues of our grandparents, not our parents. We spend time in therapy about our parents because they scarred us in some ways. But it's our grandparents' pain that energetically, if we could heal, our life would change. And I will share this with you because this is what the cards have taught me. And if I could say this is one of the biggest lessons of it, is that we don't ever really forgive others. We forgive ourselves for loving people that perhaps betrayed us or hurt us.
I want you to explain that, Tony, when we come right back, Tori. Tori Hartman, our special guest on Coast to Coast AM.